to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
I'm Dan Fernandez.
And I'm really excited about this week's show. We've got a lot of cool stuff going on.
There's a lot of cool stuff going on.
That's right. A couple of announcements to start this thing off. So Visual Studio Light Switch.
Yeah, new product announcement. Capital L, capital S for those of you grammar...
That's right. It is a trademark, reserved trademark.
Yes.
But we announced this at Visual Studio Live this week.
Yes.
So Visual Studio Light Switch, who would you say it's targeted for?
So the way I look at it is, stop thinking so much about customer, but as opposed to scenario. And the scenario being departmental apps where you're doing forms over data. So people that the customer for that is can be a number of people. It can be like an IT department that, for example, has like a simple help desk style application. Or it could be somebody that, hey, I just need admin screens for this. So that's what the tool does really, really well. It does forms over data. So who are the people that need this? Maybe it's departmental, small companies, value-added resellers that are doing, custom app development, that sort of thing. But it's really think about what the app can do and its forms over data, and then who are the right customers for that. Not necessarily ProDes, which is what you see in Xander's. This is Jason Xander's blog post where he goes through.
Mm-hmm.
You see people saying, this isn't for professional developers, you guys are doing a crime against humanity, yada, yada.
Gotcha. Because it's really targeted at someone who maybe doesn't have a comp sci background, it's probably never written any code before, but has all these data sources that they need to build an app over. So this reminds me of Access, just the way it was really easy to build forms over your Access databases. But what I think sets it apart from Access is, Access is one data source, but this gives you access to lots, no pun intended, gives you the ability to write forms over data where your data source might be your eBay account, it might be your FedEx account, it might be an Access database or an Excel database as well, but now you want to write these applications which pull together data from all these different sources and do fun things with it, right?
Yeah. And the applications are Silverlight applications, mm-hmm. and you can design them as in-browser applications
or
out-of-browser applications.
Deploy them
as
out
well.
To the cloud, so there's a really easy publish-to-cloud scenario.
You
in
get
there.
The Azure connection,
yep.
WCF REST services, and I think what we're going to see is a lot of extensions built on top of this.
Right.
So whether it's control vendors like the Component Ones, Telerik, those kind of people,
mm-hmm.
Or other people building like, hey, here's how to do connections to specific data sources, data types, et cetera. So,
exactly.
So kind of customizing it.
Exactly.
Now, the one thing that isn't in this version, but that they are thinking about or people keep getting questions on, is Windows Phone development. Because I think that's another very cool scenario where you're doing basically data entry applications.
So the call to action is there's a bunch of videos, there's a bunch of blog entries. August 23rd is when the beta becomes available. That beta won't have support for Azure, but that will come in subsequent pre-releases.
Yeah, and related to this, Jay and I did a walkthrough building your first Visual Studio Light Switch application. I talked through him in terms of, how do you do things like customizing screens, what the right level of customization, and it is a little different. Like, the big thing is, for people that have been professional developers for a while that are designing data-driven apps, you would drag and drop controls.
Mm-hmm.
In this example is you build the data model, and the UI is built based on that data model.
Got it.
Right? So, like, you're in the data designer, or you're using existing data designer, and then it automatically does the smart thing to build a screen on top of that stuff. So you're not controlling, the placement of things, labels, label mm-hmm. one problem is gone, and all that stuff.
Now, for most of this video, he doesn't write any code, but towards the end, you do get him to say, hey, let's push it and drop down to the code level. So you can write code if you want. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of things that you end up doing, like, hey, I want to be able to, maybe I'm doing the list of sessions
mm-hmm.
for upcoming PDC. I want those sessions to be in a track. That track wants to be a pre-selected list, so you'd have a lookup table. So, one, they can use a lookup table. Two is they can have a set of predefined values. So, say I'm on the add session screen, I can say, this session covers this topic, Visual Studio, for example. And that way you don't have the problem of somebody doing text matching and all that other good stuff. other validation rules, like if I'm doing an email address or a phone number, I can make sure that it is a smart default in terms of the value set.
Got it.
So lots of cool stuff there.
Cool. And also at VS Live, we announced that Visual Studio Lab Management.
Now, you did this demo, didn't you?
I did.
Did it fail at any point?
No, the demo worked flawlessly,
wow.
I have to say. Yeah.
Wow.
So we announced that Visual Studio 2010 Lab Management, which originally did not ship as part of the rest of the Visual Studio 2010 family. It was only available as a release candidate back then. We announced that it will be available by the end of August.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the one big piece of news. The other big piece of news is that we originally had a plan to charge by VM host, and you would have had to pay to make sure that you could actually deploy and work with Lab Management on a per server basis, in addition to having Visual Studio or Visual Studio Test Professional
complex
on the front end.
Complex licensing is
what
I'm hearing.
it was kind of complex. It was priced right, I believe, but it was kind of complex. Now what they've said is that we're just licensing it per user. So there's no more server licensing cost associated with it. As long as you own Team Foundation server, you're all set. So basically, if you have Visual Studio Ultimate with MSDN or Visual Studio Test Professional with MSDN, then you've got the ability to use Lab Management once we ship it at the end of this month.
So people that don't know Lab Management, can you give me the one sentence?
Yeah, so Lab Management, the easiest way to think about Lab Management is to think of it as a way to automatically manage my virtual lab for developing and testing my applications. So canonical scenario would be every night I build my software. I've got my nightly builds just as I always do. But today, if you're a tester and you come in the morning and you want to test from last night's build, you've got to set up your environment. You've got to deploy that software. You're probably using physical machines. You may have virtual machines, but still, it's a lot of work for you. You have to install the software and then run those tests. And there's just, you know, a lot of stuff you have to do. With build, deploy, test, which is a capability of Lab Management, you can automatically kick off your builds every night, provision the environments that you need. So if I had, if I was building software that needed to work in Windows Server 2003, 2008, and 2008 R2, I could provision three different virtual environments, which can each consist of one or many virtual machines.
No, it can only be virtual, though, right?
Right. That's all virtual. There's ways that you can do physical environments as well and push your code out to physical machines as well. You don't need Lab Management for that. That's just part of the Visual Studio 2010 test architecture. But for setting up virtual machines, we can restore those to a clean state, push your build out to each one of those machines, snapshot again, so that if I ever need to see, hey, show me Windows Server from Friday night's build, I could always go back to that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can run all your automated tests against each one of those environments as well. So that might include unit tests. It might include functional UI tests. So we have a new test type called coded UI test, which can actually click through the application. You can set assertions to say, hey, after I click through and get to the order page, does the grand total look correct? That's kind of the scenario that I take you through during this demo. And then the testers get in. If any of those automated tests fail, they can create bugs from those tests. I can even create a snapshot of that virtual environment and attach a shortcut to that snapshot with the bug. So as a developer, you get in and you're like, hey, I want to work on this problem now. All you do is you open up that snapshot, it restores back to the state and time where the tester found the bug, and you've got everything you need in order to reproduce that problem and ultimately fix it.
No, but the developer would need Ultimate on
the developer either needs
he gets a snapshot.
The developer either needs Visual Studio Ultimate or Visual Studio Test Professional in that case.
Okay.
Yep.
So last thing, is this going to help me configure my laptop? So, for example, let's say I, you know, want to have a Windows 7 64-bit build with Office and a bunch of other stuff to configure my environment. Is this the solution I'm going to be using for home?
This is not that solution. So you're talking more about like an automated installation kit.
I'm looking at something to set up my environment. And, you know, you're probably going to have the same thing in a Lab Management where you have to configure an environment where your Office add-in. You know, your Zobni add-in that you're testing, you have to install, you know, the base operating system Office.
So the way you would deal with that is you would go through installing all of that once, create a base image, store that in the SCVMM library. So behind this, I'm getting much deeper than I thought we would. But basically, you store it in the SCVMM
I'm trying to get you. This is gotcha journalism right here.
So you persist it in the SCVMM library. You can sysprep it if you choose to. You don't have to. But then once you've got your baseline of software, and let's say you're Zobni and Zobni, however they pronounce it, and you're developing that on a daily basis, well, every time you deploy, you're pushing out to a virtual machine that already has Outlook, it already has Windows, it already has SQL, whatever other prerequisites you need on that machine are, and then you just restore from that snapshot and deploy the incremental update. It's not designed to help you and Angie set up your home network.
Ouch. So, okay. Well, still sounds version. Interesting. Still sounds interesting.
Speaking of interesting, so the IE9 Platform Preview 4 is now available. It keeps on getting better and better. We're now up to 95% on the ACID tests.
Yeah, and there's a bunch of cool applications that ship with this. IE Beats is one of them, which is a SVG, Scalable Vector Graphics, demo. There's an updated Hamster Dance as well.
Finally, it's about time they brought that back, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But check out IE Test Drive, check out PP4, and there's a lot of cool samples, and, you know, IE team is just cranking out different versions, so it's kind of really exciting to see. I think getting a lot of kudos from the community, not only for their standard support, their embrace of the community, but also the steady drumbeat of releases.
Yeah, drumbeat. IE beat.
Nice.
So that's cool. And also, I was reading something. I don't have all the facts in front of me, but something about IE8 actually picking up market share over the last few weeks. So if you follow the browser wars, IE has kind of been in this slow decline over the last few years. But it actually peaked up over the last couple of months. So good to see.
Sure.
So this is James Sr. talking about an O data helper for Web Matrix. So speaking of building applications which span multiple data types, O data is kind of a hot way. It's a standard. Microsoft's backing it. Lots of industry players are backing it. You see guys like Netflix and PayPal building O data providers for interfacing with their applications. And so now this is the O data helper for Web Matrix. So if you're using Web Matrix, this makes it easy for you to consume O data sources.
Yeah, and I think one of the other areas is this helper could also be the tool for building other helpers in Web Matrix. So, for example, if I wanted to build without having to have... So the Web Matrix customer is really targeted at somebody that's, say, the non-professional developer, not necessarily... They just want to build a website. They don't really care about...
It's the PHP guy.
Yeah,
right?
PHP guy is probably a good example, but it would be, you know, the person that's using PHP, not because they're a PHP guy, but because it's the fastest... They need a website done this weekend for their kids' soccer league. What this allows you to do is to build web helpers. So this does OData does the underlying data connection, but you don't want to have to learn the OData syntax, which can be a little hard. So you can just say Netflix.search. Underneath the covers, the person that builds the Netflix.search can be using OData. So it's kind of like a nice thing for people that are building content helpers in Web Matrix to use this as the foundation, if you will.
Gotcha.
And to build even easier versions.
Yep. James has a nice video he takes you through showing how to do that. So the WPF ribbon control, we've been talking about this for a while, and it's finally here.
Yeah, actually, I think this is an update to it. But, yeah. I mean, if you look at it, it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
So it's got the different drop-downs. Check out the WPF team blog for all the different versions. But, I mean, it shows, you know, it basically looks exactly like a feature-rich exactly like Office. So it has even the minimized stuff. You can see it running in the browser. Basically everything here.
Can you use this as like a World of Warcraft add-on to like have a ribbon for all your commands?
No, because you would have to use that in Frame XML.
Oh,
now that would be kind of funny to build a Frame XML
ribbon. It was a rhetorical
ribbon.
Question. I really don't care. I don't play World of Warcraft.
No, it's great. I'm going to spend all night fixing it. But that's wonderful. It's easy for you to just drop these thought bombs.
So we talked about ELMA a few weeks ago. This is the exception, logger, module, and handler. Is that right?
I think that's right.
That's right.
Okay. Logging, module, and yeah, whatever.
So basically, you've got an ASP.NET website, and you can configure this. It's a good way of capturing all of those exceptions.
We've talked about
that
before.
Thrown behind the scenes, exactly. Just
sure.
bringing people up to speed in case they don't watch every episode. Hi, Mom.
Okay.
And so this, there's some extra steps you have to do if you want to enable this with WCF services.
Yeah.
So
go through the basic ASP.NET instructions, and then it's, you need to build a service behavior attribute .cs and an error handler .cs. So basically go through this blog post and you can see exactly the things you need to do. But this way you get the same exception logging that you get in say your ASP.NET app.
That's right. So Netduino, is that how we're saying it?
Yeah, so Arduino mm-hmm. is a very popular it's a number of things, right? Because it includes a programming language and hardware, but maybe calling it a platform is one way to say this. The Netduino is something that can interface with Arduino hardware, but is programmable via the .NET Micro framework.
Wow,
so
this
all,
is hot.
All the different Arduino connections, maybe a light sensor, the Wi-Fi connection, all the other stuff. You've probably seen some examples, like the plant that twitters when it needs water.
Oh, yeah.
Some of those were done with Arduino, for example. So you can reuse, you know, the moisture sensor mm-hmm. and the Wi-Fi sensor on a Netduino card, and this is make putting it out there. But the best part is, rather than having to learn the C-like syntax of Arduino and not getting a debugging environment, you as a C-sharp developer, and I think it is only C-sharp, can program this. So you see LED.write to be able to turn on an LED and say, this is basically making it blink. Turning it on and off, for example.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Very, very complicated source code. Everything I'm using is C-Sharp Express. They have a file new project template. Like, everything is within here. So there are some things Micro Framework can't do, like edit and continue, but you still get a really great development environment.
My plant keeps twittering saying it needs beer, so I think I've got a setting wrong. But what I really like about this is that I'm a big fan of fidgets. Fidgets allow you to program them as well. Very similar model. The problem with that is that you always have to be hooked up USB.
Tethered,
exactly, because all the logic is running on your laptop or your desktop or what have you.
Yes.
But with these, you just push the code down to the. There's probably a ROM on there that holds the instructions that you're providing, and then it does the rest, and it can run by itself autonomously.
Yeah. Awesome. So if you all have ideas, let us know. And I know Clint
has a couple.
Yeah, Clint's pretty excited for this, for Coding for Fun as well. So, yeah.
It's awesome.
This is very cool stuff. Yeah.
Good to see. Oh, please. So customizing the Visual Studio start page. So this is, I like this because, you know, we've talked about customizing your Visual Studio IDE and making it your own in the past, but I love the direction he's taking this is kind of it's kind of far out. It's got that like transparent, translucent graphic, and
I think that's actually from the Win 7, right?
Is it?
Yeah, that might be one of the desktop wallpapers.
Oh, nice.
So the moral of the story is you can, and it's a 2-part series mm-hmm. that you get access to a lot of different stuff. So if you want like the MRU, most recently used projects. The file new project, all those kind of built-in commands, you get that as well. And here's how you can change the XAML. So you can have full access to the XAML for the start page. I actually think we need to build, for Coding for Fun again, like a pimped-out start page. Like, what would be a total reimagining of the start page? Like, you could imagine, like, almost like a Twitter feed of TFS, like the last 10 TFS.
Mm-hmm.
Items
or
and
like,
stuff like that.
Like my plant complaining that it needs beer, my twittering plant, or like University of Florida Gator themed, like start page.
I'm telling you, man.
Really cool,
yeah, exactly.
There.
Like
yeah.
You just go through a wizard. You know, you choose Miami Hurricanes. I don't know this Gator thing.
Yeah,
but that would be awesome.
Yeah, be very cool.
Yeah.
Get on it.
So yeah, because we have so much time.
So this is Steve Marks writing about adaptive streaming with Windows Azure. And
So this is not live streaming, mm-hmm. but adaptive streaming, which is, you know, where it has those small HTTP chunks mm-hmm. that allow you to go up and down based on your own bandwidth.
Right.
So if I have a fast connection using the Silverlight player, you go to the fast. If my connection dives, it goes down.
Yeah.
Right.
This is really cool. I mean, we have this problem a lot where we have you know, events that will run like Mix or PDC, and we take all those sessions, we put them online so that you can go watch them, and then we have these huge spikes of traffic within the first 30 days, and after that we've got a tail of people that are checking them out as reference and going back
Drum
and watching
beat.
Things. Exactly. And so that lends itself perfectly well for the elastic scale of something like Azure. So now to be able to use that for your own video recordings, if you're running events or you know, anything along those lines, then this is great. They also mentioned that they're still on track to support full IIS media services, which, if I'm not mistaken, that would give you the ability to do live streaming, right?
Yeah, so that's a really good point. Is one, Azure team, like this is I don't want to say a workaround, but it's one way to enable adaptive streaming. They are going to do the full IIS media service. The nice thing about the full IIS media service is besides live, it actually can add more profiles. So, for example, you know, say, you know, whatever the next device is that needs whatever the next thing, it would be a checkbox in IIS Media Services as opposed to, say, some re-encoding of files.
Sure.
Because IIS Media Services would do that stuff dynamically.
So if you want to have a special stream that supports iPhone versus Windows Phone versus whatever, you just check the box.
Yeah, so there's a lot of, and Steve goes through the differences, you know, what you the limitations, if you will,
got
of
it.
Using Windows Azure versus IIS Media Services. But you're right, man. Them moving to IIS Media Services for web roles is in the future means it's going to work.
It's hotness. So picks of the week. So my picks of the week is 9 UML videos on Channel 9.
All
and
right.
These are by Clint Edmondson.
Yeah.
Just want to make sure I didn't botch your name there, Clint. And so Clint basically went through and took a look at all the new UML designers that we have that are supported in Visual Studio 2010 Ultimate. So in the past, you know, a lot of people have beat up on Microsoft, said, hey, why don't you support UML? So with Visual Studio 2010 Ultimate, we are now supporting UML, so we've embraced it. It's up to 2.1.1 UML standard. One of the
only 2.1.1?
Well, it's whatever the latest is.
Kidding, I don't know.
2.1.2, whatever it is. We've got 5 UML designers in the box, and Clint takes you through each one of those and shows you some various ways you might want to use them.
Cool. Very cool. Mine is Brian Peek, or Burpee, as he's getting to be known, Giovanni's friend. He is was in town for Visual Studio Live, and built a Jeopardy board. So he took the That Was Easy button from
Staples.
From Staples, yep. Yeah. And basically rigged it to be the controller, and then actually built an app that looks exactly like a Jeopardy. So he's having, I think it was VS Live attendees versus Microsoft
nice.
Speakers versus VS Live speakers.
Oh, wow.
So, pretty interesting kind of team approach. But I love some of these categories. The goo, which I helped them on a couple of them. Like one of the questions would be a unique identifier.
What is a red polo shirt?
What is a goo-id? All answers must have goo in them.
Oh, nice, nice. That's
yes,
awesome.
Yes, so I'm trying to think of what some of the other ones were, but like one of them was like system.configuration because it has goo in it.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's a little hard.
That's awesome.
That was the 1,000. So name that namespace. You know,
Has he published actually the questions and answers on here?
Are you saying I ruined it? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm just saying. Oh, okay. Okay. So we should make those available.
Yeah,
sounds
we
like
should.
You've got some good stuff.
We should. So there a lot of good stuff, and how, you know, all the details on how to build it.
Nice.
Are in there as well. So.
Very cool.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
And we'll see you next week.